Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for asking. And I want to thank you listeners for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will be talking about the fifth stage of Kriya Yoga Pratyahara, Sense Withdrawal. Pratyahara is a series of breathing exercises and techniques that enables one to separate consciousness from sensual perception. Pratyahara empowers one to separate the conscious mind from the bondage of the physical body and the instinctual drives. This marked by a person's ability to engage intelligence in decision-making. Now, the conscious mind becomes the central base of operation and is equipped to withstand influence. Listen as we discuss sense withdrawal as an important phase in human development. The term often used in the yoga community is detachment, and the advice is to be detached. However, this is misleading because we must be attached to something. We all have desire. The key to this stage is found in the yama, brahmacharya, carrier of Brahman. Once we have internalized the life force in the physical body so that the physical body desires nothing. Then from this vantage point, we can lift ourselves out of the grips of duality and gain objectivity. This stage is the first phase in the process of human development. So welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. So Swami, again, in my research for today's radio show, I did come up with some basic information to inform our readers about Pratyahara. In the classical yoga system, it incorporates eight limbs, and so together it's the complete system for spiritual unfoldment. The eight limbs are yama, which are the observances, niyama, which is the disciplines, asana, postures, pranayama is breath control, pratyahara is control of senses, and dharana, concentration, dhyana, meditation, and then of course samadhi, which is absorption. So pratyahara is actually composed of two different Sanskrit words, prati and ahara. So ahara means food or anything that we take into ourselves from the outside. And prati is a preposition that means against or away. So in the book of Light on Yoga by B.K.S. Iyengar, he describes or defines pratyahara as being withdrawal and emancipation of the mind from the domination of the senses and sensual objects, the fifth stage of yoga. So Swami, what I'd like to do is get your thoughts and start talking about pratyahara, and particularly I'd like to go back to the summary and where you had mentioned that the key to that stage is found in the yama of brahmacharya, which means carrier of Brahman. Can you give us some more information about that?
Well, the first thing I'd like to do is I'd like to make a little maybe note as to as far as how we interpret yama. And it's not, yama isn't the observances, but it's the abstentions. And niyama isn't disciplines, but they are the observances. Pranayama is not breath control, but it is control of prana, which is the life force. Pratyahara is sense withdrawal. Yeah, the rest of them, I think, we're pretty close to what we do. Yeah, I kind of agree with what BKS Iyengar says, of withdrawal and emancipation of the mind from the domination of the senses and sensual objects. Now, in order to do that, the important thing, because that's where your fifth yama, brahmacharya, is really significant. It's of the utmost importance because that's the essence of yoga. Brahmacharya means carrier of Brahman. Yoga means union, union of the individual with the divine. So the instruction for yoga is that we really must separate from our attachment to one source of sustenance and then a rejoining or a reconnecting to a different source of sustenance. What this does is it initiates a process in development. And that's why pratyahara is the fifth stage of yoga. Now, your first four stages of yoga, yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, they're going to basically break down into practices. And your practices are going to translate into a path of action, a path of knowledge, and a path of devotion, specifically designed to facilitate a process where the individual goes from unconscious awareness to self-conscious awareness to superconscious awareness. So there's intention behind these practices. And pratyahara marks the first phase in your process. And the first phase in your process is experienced when the conscious mind separates from the confinement and limitation of sensual perception, which means it literally has to separate from body-bound awareness. Now, in order to do that, though, you have to attach it to something else. You can't just detach. You can't just release. Because like you said in the opening, that we all have desire. We all come in with a physical body. We all have needs. And as physics will tell us, matter can't be created nor destroyed, only changed. So if you have desire, you can't get rid of desire. But what you can do is you can change what it is that you do desire. And basically what we do when we experience pratyahara, we shift from our desire for things visible and tangible, which comes under the heading of matter or material things. And we also separate from our attachment to things that are invisible but tangible, which would come under the heading of thoughts or visions. And then what we want to do is we want to attach ourselves to something that's invisible and intangible, which is where things become really challenging.
So I have a question about a statement that we said in the very beginning in the summary. And my question is about the statement that this marks a person's ability to engage intelligence in decision making. Now, is that because that the mind should now be like a clean slate and that all the factors that are involved in making the decision, there is no influence on other parts of the mind that would influence maybe a wrong decision?
Well, what it actually means is that while you're employing these strategies, you're developing what in yoga we call the sheaths. That you have three bodies, but you have five sheaths. And these sheaths are kind of like throttling, regulating mechanisms that enable us to regulate the traffic that goes on between these three different bodies. And they play out as what we call your psychological organs. The concept of intelligence means that you compartmentalize psyche, which means that you've separated from your original state of consciousness, which is really unconscious awareness, where everything is in this intermingled state of chaos or confusion. And from that perspective, we really don't know the difference between a need, a want, or our purpose. And so as you enlist these strategies, you start to develop these sheath systems, which basically compartmentalize consciousness. So first you divide and conquer before we try and unite and stand. And when your mental functions are operative, then your four mental functions, which are perception, reason, memory, intuition, then you start to make decisions by regulating your intention based on passing information through all of these different mental functions. which will increase your, what we call, intelligence, your ability to better decisions, which is very different than if we are emotional or reactive, where there is no point of interception, there is no process of that information. It's just where there's, for every action, there's an equal and an opposite reaction. But when you develop your sheath systems, then all of a sudden, your conscious mind emerges strong enough to withstand influences which are coming from all of these different directions. And then you're in a position where you can make a conscious choice, an intelligent decision. And what that entails is basically that you're processing your information through mental function. Say, for example, I'm on a diet and I pass an ice cream parlor. And I think ice cream, I want ice cream, I like ice cream. If I'm emotional, I go in and I have ice cream. Then when I walk out, then I feel guilty. Boy, that was dumb. I'm trying to lose weight and here I am eating something that's contributing to my demise. Whereas if your mental functions are operative, when the input comes in through the senses and your response is ice cream, I like ice cream, then it goes into reason. And so reason then enables you to organize that information. You can then process it and look at your experience, your memory, and what happened the last time you had ice cream. And the last time you had ice cream, you put weight on. And then, of course, you use your intuition, prescience, your ability to fabricate probable realities, that if I eat ice cream, there's a possibility that I'm going to put weight on, I want to lose weight, therefore I keep walking.
Well, that's a pretty good example, because I think that that helps us to be able to really kind of pinpoint where it is we need to be stronger mentally.
Yeah, and that's basically what yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama do for us, is they develop our psychological organs. And the mind or mental functions, just like any muscle in the body, if we don't use them, we lose them. So you enlist these strategies and you develop the ability to throttle, regulate, and manage influences that are coming from the senses. But the most important thing is this whole thing of brahmacharya and the concept of joining the mind with a different source of sustenance, because that's really what initiates this progressive cycle. That's what gives everything power. Otherwise, what we're trying to do is we're trying to abstain from things that we're desiring or craving. Whereas once we are free from the unnecessary dependencies and we have the benefit of the life force as a resource that is readily available to us, then we have the power. And then, of course, you're not abstaining from things. You're just making choices.
So I think this is a good place to pause to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in a few moments. Kriya Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So again, Swami, I was doing some research for today's show, and I came across a website, swamij.com, and I found a graphic that he had under the Pratyahara section. And on this graphic, it says, Truth, Reality, Self, Atman, Brahman, Purusha, Pure consciousness, or whatever else you want to call it, cannot be smelled, tasted, seen, touched, or heard. Those are merely senses, which are instruments by which consciousness experiences outer or inner objects. To know the true self, it is imperative to go beyond the senses. This is called sense withdrawal, or pratyahara. It is a prerequisite to advanced meditation. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I agree with all the language, the how to do that, that I think is probably the most challenging thing, because the instruction I think that you had said, it is imperative to go beyond the senses. That could mean many things to anybody. Now, the thing that you have to understand is that reality is multidimensional, and things are happening on three different levels simultaneously. So things are physical, they are mental, and then there are spiritual. Now, the things that are physical and mental are what they call dualistic. They're in half, which means there's a point of departure, there's contrast. And that's where our lower mind works, that it picks up the contrast, and so we have sensual awareness. We have awareness of visible and tangible, invisible and tangible. Now, the whole intention of a practice of yoga is to join with the resource of energy, though, that's invisible and intangible. And that's how pratyahara really works. Because when you're joined to spirit, the unified state, there's no sensory input that the lower mind has to cope with. Then what we have to do is we have to develop spiritual understanding, spiritual capabilities, in order for us to really to be able to channel the ideas that come from the unified state. To be able to channel the information that's coming from spirit is like a different language than what we're accustomed to using our material mental means or corporeal senses. That when you're dealing with spirit, like he says in there, that you can't touch it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, you can't see it, you can't hear it, but it is the divine creative intelligence of the universe that you're actually trying to connect with. But it's unified. There's no sensory input from it.
Well, there's a statement that he has on top of this graphic, and it says, the fixation or addiction to sensation itself is one of the largest single reasons that so few people experience self-realization. And I know we had talked about that before, about the challenges that people face on their road to enlightenment. Now, do you think that pratyahara is one of the hardest of all of the limbs in the practice of yoga?
Well, to answer your question, I don't think they're hard at all if you follow the instruction. And like I say, if you get your first stage of yoga correct, yama, and you understand what brahmacharya really is, non-sensuality, which basically the difference between brahmacharya and pratyahara is one is the how-to and the other one is we have arrived. And so brahmacharya means carrier of Brahman, that we have to separate from our attachment to duality, which is fear and limitation, and then we have to join indivisible unified field, which is truth and happiness and wholeness. And when we join with that, then non-sensuality is doable. Otherwise, all we really are doing is we talk about what we think God is. And that's why it's not an intellectualization, but it's a realization. When you internalize the life force in the mind-body complex as your symbol for validation, that's what starts this whole thing up. That's when you hear the Om. That's when the mind-body complex starts up. And that's when you have the benefit of brahmacharya, carrier of Brahman. You have God's help. And from there, nothing is really all that hard.
Yeah, but now we just have to get ourselves to that point. So how do you know when you're successful with pratyahara? How do you know you've attained that skill?
Well, it starts with being able to make conscious choices. So really, when you look at all of the things that are recommended with the practice of yoga, skillful use of thought, skillful use of breath, skillful use of water, skillful use of food, skillful use of exercise, you're employing strategies and you're developing your psychological organs. Now, from that vantage point, now your psychological organs are operative, which means now the conscious mind rises above a lot of the influences that a lot of people are controlled by. And then again, matter and mind have now come together with new information, and that initiates this progressive cycle where the conscious mind starts to expand, and you literally start to transcend the limits of just seeing yourself as separate. But it is only our connection to spirit that facilitates that growth process. So as you move forward with your yoga practice, how do you know? Well, if you don't have any unnecessary dependencies, or I like the Christian way of being able to examine your practice, do you love the Lord thy God with your heart, your soul, and your mind? Another way of looking at it is the way the Buddhists look at it. Do you desire nothing? Now, again, a lot of this is going to come down to what it is that you think God is, what it is that you think desiring nothing really means.
And then when you say desiring nothing, you mean nothing as the void, not nothing as in no items, no nothing physical.
Well, it's six and one, half a dozen of the other. Whether you desire nothing or you love God, it's really two ways of saying the exact same thing. God is the void, the nothing. It is a source of sustenance, is a resource. And that's why what we've really been focusing on is the role of the causal spiritual body. That it's, sure, we use the term void or nothing, but it's the nothing out of which everything comes. It is the nothing that holds the template for perfect creation. It is, like we said, the creative intelligence of the universe.
I think I just want to ask you for some clarification on something that I had found, and I believe I might have got this from Yogapedia. And the paragraph is as follows. It says here that pratyahara is twofold. It involves withdrawal from wrong food, wrong impressions, and wrong associations, while simultaneously opening up to right food, right impressions, and right associations. We cannot control our mental impressions without right diet and right relationships, but pratyahara's primary importance lies in withdrawal from or control of sensory impressions, which frees the mind to move within. So my first part I wanted to ask you about, do you think when they're talking about wrong food, impressions, and associations, that they're actually talking about the yamas and niyamas? And then my next question is freeing the mind to move within. I think I might need some clarification on that.
Well, to try and answer your first question, yeah, you know, the concept of right diet, right relationships, right food, wrong food, that should have been addressed in yama, niyama. And pratyahara is really the result of making those choices. But the key here is like when they use the term right relationship, and then you don't get clarification on that, because your right relationship has to be brahmacharya. You have to have a primary relationship with the divine in order to really be able to actualize pratyahara successfully based on what it is that they're talking about. It's just like I remember going to a workshop on Buddhism, and the instructor kept talking about good desires, you know, because even food can become, you can be an organic vegan and you could be neurotic about food, and food becomes a barrier. That this isn't really about living longer or looking younger, and it's not about your body. You make the choices because you want to have sensitivity for something that's invisible and intangible. And foods that produce cravings and disturbances will undermine your sensitivity. You won't be able to realize or feel the presence of this very subtle resource.
And I have another question for you. So there's a lot of talk out there in this community about stop thinking. And it's a concept that I find is very interesting. And I want to know if you could give me your take on that.
That whole thing about stopping thinking, first of all, it isn't possible that thinking is your number one life-sustaining force. And so if we stop thinking, then our physical bodies then cease to exist. That's what we talk about in Kriya Yoga, is the whole thing of thinking right. And I think a lot of that stop thinking comes out of the Buddhist community, where they equate thinking with desire. And so what they're basically trying to do is they're trying to stop desiring. They can't do that, so they try and stop thinking. But the only way to really do that is, like I was saying, is you must desire nothing. You must desire the void or the nothing. Then, of course, you don't have to stop thinking, but you think about nothing all the time. And another thing, I remember a saying from the Zen community back like in the 70s. Lose your mind and come to your senses. This was a goal back then. And to me, I think pratyahara is kind of antidote to that statement. It's the anti-pratyahara is what they're talking about, which really should be, or what pratyahara is lose your senses and come to your mind. And that's the mind, the one mind of the divine. The absolute, the unified field of consciousness, spirit or pure consciousness or true consciousness. That's what you want.
Well, I think that's a great place to close down our show for today. So listeners, I invite you out there to visit our website. It's www.ipdtransform.com. So once you're there, you can make comments and posts about this show or give us ideas for future shows. But keep those comments coming, because we do enjoy hearing from you. Be sure to tune in next week. We're going to talk about the super blue blood moon that's going to hit us on January 31st at 8:27 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. And also, don't forget, be sure to listen to our weekly Facebook Live videos that we do Wednesdays at 5 p.m. So, Swami, do you have any other final thoughts or comments about today's program?
Well, I would like to wish everybody good luck with their withdrawal from their senses and success with coming to their minds. And with that, I'll wish everybody a good day. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton along with Swami Jayananda. We'll be signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.